shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendricks.
This is a Tommy Bahama shirt.
Yeah, people think Tommy Bahama's gay.
Well, let them think that. Welcome back to the show, Phil Hendry Show. What do you think of it, Robert?
I like a pretty good shirt. I'm just saying, I heard that Tommy Bahama ain't no chick magnet. That is for sure.
I don't give a sweet cheese if it is or if it isn't, okay? I happen to like this shirt. I don't even know if it is a Tommy Bahama, but if it is a Tommy Bahama, I happen to like it. It ain't no chick magnet. I don't care, man. I'm working here, okay? We're working here. Just like Ratso Rizzo, he's walking here. I'm working here. 877-876-PHIL. It is our news and information hour, and we're going to get Skype in here. Yes, indeed, Skype is what we need so that we can have clear communication to a number of contacts out in the free world, people who can alert me to the audio feed problems that we may have, people who can alert me to the problems with fashion, my Tommy Bahama, whatever the hell the problem is, people will be able to alert us. We'll get Skype up in here, as they say. 877-876-7445. What's the problem, bud?
I just think that tonight on a show when Mr. Hall called up saying to get off the whole topic about, you know, the guy, what the guy was talking about in the first hour.
Yeah, what were we talking about in the first hour? Who was that guest we had?
The last hour, I know we had Lloyd Bonifide in the first hour on the Lloyd Bonifide. Oh, yeah, that was Bob Bellwinner.
Oh, yeah, the whole hero thing. Yeah, that was pretty bizarre. You know, one of the things about that story in Texas is that it's one of those fast-breaking stories. I don't know that on our show we should be dealing with those fast-breaking stories. We need to deal with stories where people have an absolute concrete opinion about something or they have experience with it, you know. But the story there in Texas was a little bizarre. And quite frankly, some writer who says he doesn't like to call people heroes unless they're cops or soldiers, I don't know what to make of that. All I do know is that, you know, he got a few people upset with him, especially Hall, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Mr. Hall got upset and everything. I think you got to be very careful about that.
I don't give a... Let me explain something to you, bud, for the last time. Whether he gets upset or not, I don't care. I'm not going to let that dictate how this radio show goes. I can tell you right now, I'm my own man. See this? See this guy here? I don't do anything that anybody tells me to do. I do it only if it is for the better of the show. I have integrity. Thank you very much. What?
Mr. Hall.
Say, how about that anyway? So you want to wash the car and then get it over to my house? Are we on the air?
Yeah. You know, David, I if we could talk about this after the show.
No, I just want to make sure. You wash the car, you get it back over to my house, and then, of course, you can use it this weekend, and, those other things that I asked you to do.
Yeah, fine.
All right, I'm sorry I called in the middle of the show.
What are you talking about, man? You're going to wash this car? What are you doing?
Yeah, you're on your knees to the man.
No, I'm not. There's just some things that we... discussed. All right.
No, man. You're telling me like you're on your knees to the man, like you said.
Yeah, you're on your knees to the man.
Will you shut up? I'm not on my knees to the man. I'm just walking on my ankles. All right, so...
yeah, I knew it.
Just take it easy. HBO cancels Luck. HBO has canceled the TV show Luck after the third thoroughbred has died. This is a television show about horse racing. And this is the third animal to have died during production of this HBO miniseries, a miniseries that has celebrated horse racing. Now, I was born and raised in Arcadia, California. All you have to do is go to a map, or you can look on Winklepedia or whatever you use to see that Arcadia is the home of Santa Anita Racetrack. So my whole life, from the time I was very small up until adulthood, at least part of the year, my life was about horse racing. Whether I was at the track, whether I wasn't at the track, didn't matter because our little town would get invaded by these cars. I mean, every winter from December the 25th through April, suddenly there would be this just rush of traffic coming into Arcadia from Los Angeles and elsewhere. I mean, just an enormous amount of traffic. Used to get tens of thousands of people out at Santa Anita. And this was, you know, can you imagine this now? Just think about this for a second. We had a grade school right across the street from Santa Anita Racetrack. We have down the street from my grade school was another elementary school called Holly Avenue School in Arcadia. All right. In the city of Arcadia, there were also several other little grade schools. First Avenue School was one, and up in Sierra Madre, there was St. Rita's. So you've got all of these little kids on bicycles, on foot, and some of them in buses. But in those days, not everybody rode the bus, and a lot of kids rode their bikes. And at the same time, you've got all these cars that are streaming out of the parking lot at Santa Anita. This was my life for 8 solid years in grammar school, and then again for 4 years in high school, for a total of 12 years when I grew up there. Every year, every single solitary year from December to April, suddenly this enormous influx of traffic, tons and tons of cars. Meanwhile, you got kids walking home from school, riding bikes. I don't remember it. I'm sure it happened, but it didn't happen to the extent that there was any panic. But I will tell you now, I don't remember any specific incidents of a kid getting hit by a car, run over by a car, kids getting killed, anything like that happening in that period of time. The Arcadia cops had control of each traffic light in the city. They had a cop standing at every traffic light in the city, controlling the flow of the traffic in and out of that racetrack.
How'd they do it?
Well, I think the key was this. Years later, I got to talking to some guys that worked on the Arcadia police force in those days. They said, we got all those cars out of there in 45 minutes. 45 minutes, they were gone. I think he might have said 45 to an hour.
Yeah, you get about 45 to an hour, then there are no little kids out there.
Right. Well, if they get the cars out of there and off the street, boom, that's it. And the kids are safe. But, you know, you don't have traffic leaving all at once. When the final horse racing has whatever it is, 7 or 8 races on the program for a day, on the card for the day, and people are coming and going watching these races. But most people come for the first race and stay all the way to the end. And after the end of the last race of the day, bang, everybody's in their car and they're out of there. And I think that took place, let's say, 5:30 at night. So probably the fact that school ended around 3:30 was another factor in weighing in the favor of safety. But I got to tell you, it's crazy. The only reason why it even was tolerated is because the track was there longer than a lot of the schools. The Arcadia, the Holy Angel school that I went to, the grade school I went to, was newer than the Santa Anita racetrack. Santa Anita was built in 1932. And many of the schools that we had in Arcadia were built later. So the track predated everybody, and everybody sort of had to work around the racetrack. In any event, the horse racing series Luck has been canceled by HBO after a third thoroughbred died during production of the series starring Dustin Hoffman and Nick Nolte. The drama about the seedier side of horse racing will air the final 2 episodes of its first season now in progress. The series won't return for the second season that began production last month. While we maintain the highest safety standards possible, accidents unfortunately happen, and it is impossible to guarantee that they won't in the future. Accordingly, we've reached this difficult decision. The move was made with David Milch, the show's creator, and Michael Mann, his fellow executive producer on the drama that brought the film actor Hoffman to the series. It was a high-profile project for the premium channel that stakes its reputation on such fare. HBO said it was immensely proud of the series and those involved in it, and the producers said in a joint statement that they loved this series, they loved the cast, they loved the crew, and they loved the writers. A horse was injured and euthanized at Santa Anita Racetrack, and HBO agreed to suspend filming with the animals after the Humane Group that oversees Hollywood Productions had issued an immediate demand that all production involving horses shut down pending an investigation. The horse was euthanized at the track in suburban Arcadia. During season 1 filming in 2010 and 2011, 2 horses were hurt during racing scenes and euthanized. HBO defended its treatment of the animals, saying it has worked with the American Humane Society and racing industry experts to implement safety protocols. The American Humane Association's film and TV unit, the group sanctioned and supported by the entertainment industry to protect animals used in filming, called for a production halt at Santa Anita after the second horse's death. Racing resumed after new protocols were put in place and proved effective. I guess they're racing horses?
Yeah, they're racing horses on a TV show.
Oh, not actual racing of horses.
No, man, that like fake race.
Well, TV races, okay. On Tuesday, Gary Beck, a California Horse Racing Board veterinarian, said he had examined the horse as part of routine health and safety procedures before it was to race. Later in the day, the horse passed the inspection. The horse was on her way back to the stall when she reared, flipped over backward, and struck her head on the ground. An attending veterinarian determined that euthanasia was appropriate. You get three horses dying, and horse racing doesn't even have that kind of a track record, if you'll pardon the expression. I mean, I could be wrong. I haven't heard of horse racing losing three thoroughbreds at the same track in 3 years. All right, so that's the end of that. The seedier side of racing, huh? Well, I was hopeful that they would be also showing the better side of racing, because horse racing is a reputable and beautiful sport. And, you know, they could use all the help they can get these days. But unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe, luck. You're out of luck, baby.
Yeah, just see, out of luck.
Yeah, you're all out of luck now.
Yeah, you're out of luck. Okay, we'll keep beating that into the ground during the commercial break so you don't have to hear that. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, back with more in our news and information hour here on the Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, Phil TV and HD. Take a look at our live streaming video cast tonight.
Woo!
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
If you're looking at Phil TV and HD, I have there on the screen a New York Times. Is that the New York Times? It is the Chicago Tribune, excuse me, reporting on a Goldman Sachs executive by the name of Greg Smith, who wrote a op-ed that appeared in the New York Times outlining a number of complaints about Goldman. Most notably, the bank had, quote, lost its way, shirking the needs of its customers out of greed. And this has created quite a stir, and I think with good reason, and it should be something that should be welcome, you know.
That's on account of a lot of stuff you say, Mr. Henry.
All right, well,
don't go kissing his ass, man.
I ain't kissing his ass. Not a lot of things you say, though.
Well, thank you, bud.
Oh, brother.
Take it easy.
Yeah, you just wish you thought of it.
I didn't wish I thought of it, man. Just quit laying it on so thick.
All right, take it easy. Look. I mean, it's something we all talk about here on the show, and that is, has America decided that money is so important that it doesn't really matter how you make it? Now, money is important. Why would I pretend that money isn't important? Of course it's important. Do you want it? Yes, you do want it. Do I want it? You better believe I want it. Does money buy you happiness? No, but it buys you the freedom, a great deal of freedom, to begin your search for happiness. Yes, indeed. That's what I believe. But the way you make your money in life, you know what? You got to look in the mirror at the end of your days. And if you feel good about your life, what can I tell you? I will say this, though. If we continue to, in our country, ignore what was at one time a very, it was a very prime directive, if you will.
Yeah, like Star Trek.
Just like Star Trek. What do you mean, Star Trek?
Yeah, like that. They got that non-interference directive.
That ain't a non-interference directive. I'm saying that this is a very, very prime a bit of morality to say, I want to do my very best for my customers. I want to give them a product that is a quality product that we can be proud of, that they will come back to us again and again to buy, that we're not going to sit at the end of the day and say, boy, we really conned a lot of people into that, didn't we? Boy, we really got a lot of fish on the line for that one. I mean, I'd rather not live my life like that. I don't know about anybody else. Some people, they don't care. And it could very well be that all of those psychopaths and sociopaths that we love to talk about so enjoyably, in the words of, to paraphrase, General Ripper, it could be that those psychopaths and those sociopaths are more numerous in the business world than we first would be willing to believe. That they don't care about you, me, themselves. In fact, they just like the game of amassing as much wealth as they can. It doesn't matter how they do it. Goldman Sachs executive Greg Smith unleashed a storm, penning a stinging commentary against his soon-to-be former employer, one of the world's largest investment banks. In his missive, which appeared in the New York Times, he outlined a number of complaints about Goldman, most notably that the bank had lost its way, shirking the needs of its customers out of greed. In the following edited transcript, workplace experts discussed their reactions to the piece. Why do these public displays of anger toward an employer grab our attention? It confirms everybody's worst fear about what's going on inside the company. We see ourselves in Mr. Smith's response. It's the one I'd like to write, but I can't. There was a study done about a decade ago suggesting that roughly 55% of employees see their organization as violating its obligation to its customers and its employees. We start shaking our heads and saying, yeah, that's what I'm feeling, so it resonates with us. That was a comment made by Robert Rubin, who's the associate professor of management at DePaul University. It happens in my business, in the broadcasting business. I always let you guys in on my innermost feelings about that. It's happening in my business. You know, what are we in business for? Somebody messaged me on email today, who's a colleague in the business, and he said, what's happening to our business? He said this to me. We are two broadcasters. He said, what's happening to our business? And I sort of regret the response I gave him, but not 100% regret it, because I think it was the only response that I could give him, and it was the only response that I thought to give him at the time. He said, what the hell is happening to our business? I basically responded to him and said, our business, it's not my business. Because that's how I survive.
You don't think you're in a radio business?
That's how I survive. I just divorced myself from a business that is hell-bent on ignoring quality broadcasting, giving the audience the most quality product possible. This industry is hell-bent on that, and it has decided that it's going to go the cheap route. It's going to return to its days as a jukebox. It's not going to expand the entertainment platform at all. It's going to alienate its talent. It's going to steal from its talent. It's, you know, and I don't give a damn if people think that I bang the drum too much about this stuff. It doesn't make any difference to me. I could care less. Because, like I said, I ain't in that business anymore. I don't go to any more industry functions. I ain't going to any more NABs. I'm not going to any more new media seminars. I'm not going to any more Talkers Magazine. I'm not going to any of that stuff, man, because it's a waste of time. And frankly, nobody talks about radio anyway. They all sit there and posture. If you want to know what's wrong with this business, go to a freaking radio seminar. When an employee publicly condemns his or her former employer, can it be a teaching moment? Says Ginny Clark. I would like to believe so. It's a risky form of activism. Smith could be blackballed. He must intend to never go back to the industry. He was constructive in his parting comments. There's a protocol and there's accountability in his comments that the board of directors should have to pay attention to. I've been a corporate director. If I were on Goldman's board, I would take an interest and make an inquiry. There's a true business liability associated with the culture that he describes. Well, what did this man, Mr. Smith, say? Essentially, what he said was that, as these people are indicating, that Goldman Sachs had stopped caring about its clients and was only interested in making a dollar, no matter how they were making that dollar. So, I mean, that's the germane part. That's the core. That's the kernel, if you will, of truth that was contained in this man's statements. And that's what's happening in the country, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody talking about everyone making money, but nobody cares how. How do you turn it around?
It ain't going to get turned around. It's not going to get turned around. Here's how it gets turned around. It's going to get turned around when the consumers, who are the people that are listening to me right now, okay?
Yeah, but you're not talking to him. You're talking to me.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, right, but they're overhearing me. When the consumers, who are the people listening to the radio right now, when those people finally get so sick and tired of being lied to, when they get so sick and tired of being manipulated by these fools that pretend like they've got some political interest and patriotic interest in the country, and so they have their little talk show and they wave the flag and they use all of these marvelous images of America, when in point of fact, all they give a damn about, man, is holding on to their freaking job. They go from one gig to the next being a liberal or a conservative. It doesn't make any difference. These guys are pretending like, for instance, talk radio means something. The only thing it means to me, well, the only thing it means to me is I try to squeeze a little bit of fun out of this thing every night. You know, that's it. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah, Goldman said, never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Why do you get me talking about this?
That'd be pretty interesting up to, well, when you start talking about it, it's not big.
Yeah, sure.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, News and Information Hour. I got another story here on this Goldman Sachs guy, this Greg Smith, who is called a Judas in Market Watch by a writer named John Friedman. Goldman Sachs Judas blazes media path. Smith's op-ed drew about 3 million page views online. Get a load of this. See, this is a... one of those watershed moments in American business that you and I rarely pay attention to because it's up there on Wall Street and we think that that's something we don't understand. That's not the case, folks. We do understand it. We do understand. We live in the world that he lives in. It's a different business, of course. But what this man is trying to say is essentially the things that you and I think about when we go about our day's work. We sit there saying, I'd like to make a lot of money, but I know how to do my job, too. No one would say to you and hope to get away without losing a few teeth, you sure do make a lot of money for a guy that is bad at what he does. Well, that's what's going on in America. That's what people, the guys that are making the money, are bad at what they do. Let's just spell it out. Do I need to prove this to you? You take a look at the economy. Take a look at where we are. Take a look at the, sure, money's coming back in, but everybody is, quote, entrepreneurial now. You can't work for these big companies because they don't know what they're doing. They can't afford, first of all, to pay you any longer. The big companies can't afford to pay you because the guys at the top, number one, they don't want to lose their job, and they sure as hell don't want to bring on people that are smarter than them. I'm not making this up. This is the fact. I see it happening all the time in my own industry. I told you yesterday, there's guys at the top of the heap in the radio business who should be in jail, let alone not have a job. They ought to be in jail. They can't afford to pay any longer, so it becomes, in my business, it's a revenue-sharing thing. They got to go out then and actually do some real work, which is to go out and sell some advertising. Meanwhile, these guys they're no good at that. So the air talent, guys like me and others, we find other ways to make a living. I'm lucky. I'm one of the luckiest guys on earth. People pay a subscription price to listen to my radio show. They pay a subscription price to listen to the archives of this show. Not everybody can do that. Not everyone can demand that people subscribe to their audio. Now, as we get on to this story here about Greg Smith, talk about creating a buzz. Smith took the extraordinary step of writing a highly unflattering op-ed piece on Wednesday for the New York Times. By doing so, he broke ranks with a world in which the big money crowd of Wall Street happily pockets its bonuses and doesn't tend to rock the boat in public. A Goldman Sachs spokeswoman subsequently told the Times, "We disagree with the views expressed, which we don't think reflect the way we run our business. But the damage to the firm's image has been done." You think Goldman Sachs had a good image anyway? I don't know where you guys... Here's one area where I can teach you guys at Goldman Sachs something. Seriously. I know you guys are brilliant, and I know you know what you're doing, and whatever the hell it is you do, I guess you do it well. And maybe all those people on Wall Street still consider you to be just the gold standard. The average man out here on the street, the average person on the street, when we hear the name Goldman Sachs, we think a crook. That's what we do. Because all we know is what happened in 08. And that's good enough for us. Is that fair or unfair? Well, it's turning out now, at least in the opinion of one of your former employees, maybe we haven't got such a jaded point of view. Maybe we're dead on. Smith, a Wall Street star, has introduced another chapter to his legacy. Eventually, he may add another credit. He could be regarded as a media trailblazer in the rarefied world of disgruntled millionaires everywhere. Disgruntled millionaires. Wall Street traders come and go all the time, but few have quit with the flair of a Greg Smith, the Times noted in a news story about the op-ed piece. In the op-ed heard round the world, Smith blasted Goldman's corporate culture and its attitudes towards clients. Here's a phrase that I heard early on in my syndication career. When I was in local radio, you didn't hear it at all because I worked for local radio stations. And corporate culture, when you're working for a local station, even if you're working for a local station in a market the size of Los Angeles or New York, it's still a fairly small environment. But when you are in the world of syndicated radio, and I mean where there's lots of offices and lots of suits and lots of people, suddenly there's a thing called corporate culture. And corporate culture, folks, and I got at least one guy here that agrees with me, Greg Smith, corporate culture ain't got nothing to do with creative thinking. It's got nothing to do with that. It can't, because if you are creatively thinking, that means you're sort of you're looking for new and different ways to do things, and nobody in the corporate culture's got time for that, man. They want answers right now on how they can raise that bottom line next quarter. Let's go. How are we going to make the stockholders happy now? I need an answer yesterday. I ain't got time for your sitting around and bullcrapping ideas. In the op-ed piece heard round the world, Smith resigned on Wednesday as the executive director and head of the U.S. equity derivatives business in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa for Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. When did he resign?
Daddy resigned on Wednesday, man.
That's today, man. This cat, boy, you talk about a style. This guy's got a style all his own. He quits. On the day he quits, he's got an op-ed piece in the New York Times. Beautiful. As of late Wednesday afternoon, the op-ed had about 3 million page views. Times spokeswoman Eileen Murphy told the writer of this story, Mr. Friedman, by email. That's good news for the New York Times. Murphy added, it's the most heavily trafficked story on the site. The second story in terms of traffic is the business section story about the resignation. That story is over 500,000 page views as of the same period. I would suggest everybody listening to me right now, whatever you do for a living, you go over and take a look at his editorial, because I guarantee you on some level it will reflect in some way your experience. Unless you're one of the lucky ones that's working in an environment and with a company that still has their eye on the ball. And they're like gold these days in our world. Gold. If you can find people who really care about who their customer is. In my business, it's my listener. Goldman will likely feel the brunt of Smith's outburst for years, for years to come, underscoring how the media can help people communicate ideas to a mass public. And that's the big picture point here, that disgruntled millionaires on Wall Street, superstar athletes, political kingpins, corporate executives, movie stars, pop singers, and everyone else under the sun can take advantage of the media. Now, the guy that's writing this article has a decidedly negative view of what Greg Smith did, because he's lumping him in with movie stars, pop singers, and everybody else. But I haven't heard anybody take as high-minded a view of their industry, of their business, as this gentleman has. Okay, I listen to ball players. All they ever talk about is how much money they ain't making. I listen to pop stars. They may talk about how the president's a warmonger and how the world just sucks and how this and how that. But I don't hear them talking. I never hear them talking about, I wonder how I can make my music consumer happier next year. Have you ever heard Lady Gaga say that? I wonder, what do you think about Lady Gaga? Just how could I really do a song that's going to make people really feel great? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, it seems to me she did do an interview like that somewhere.
Yeah.
Where?
I don't know. It just sounded like something she'd say.
Yeah, I think it's something she would say. Or maybe she hasn't said it yet, but I think the time will come when she will.
So what does that mean? So I'm going to give her credit for it?
Yeah, I think to be fair.
To be fair, because you guys are fantasizing someday she's going to say it.
Yeah.
Jeez. Anyway, they all can communicate to the broad public their gripes, their protests, their complaints. This guy all of a sudden is turning what this man said into a, hey, the media is being used now by millionaires to just turn their personal gripes into, an advertisement or a movie poster. He didn't see what this guy is actually saying. He's saying to everybody, hey, you know what? There's trouble in paradise, man. This is a personal gripe? No, this is a commentary on corporate culture, on business in America. This is an important thing to say. This is not just some guy whining that he didn't get enough bonus money. Anyway.
Yeah, it's starting to get over my head, too.
Yeah, me too. All right, we'll be taking a break here. We'll be right back and wrap up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. The Bobby Dooley keychain is in the shop. It's a brand new, beautiful thing, just in time for losing your keys for the spring. And we've got one more item that's going to be loaded into the shop before summertime. Don't forget to vote on your favorite Ted Bell bit of all time by going to the email form at philhendryshow.com. You have to be a Backstage Pass subscriber to vote for the best Ted Bell bit of all time at philhendryshow.com. Oh, by the way, the Bob Biggerstaff podcast, Enjoy Guys, Bob and I talk on that, and you can find a link to that on our homepage. The Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Now, if you, I'll tell you this. Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And this is, you know, I don't want to be too heavy here, you know.
Well, I mean, if it's important, man, go ahead. I understand it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, just get the New York Times, you guys, and find the Greg Smith editorial. So, why am I leaving Goldman Sachs? Forget about the fact that he works on Wall Street, all this stuff, because I'm telling you right now, you're going to identify with a lot of what this man is saying. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read one little part of this, because listen to this. He's talking about his company, Goldman Sachs. He says, how did we get here? Meaning, how did it come to this place of being a company that he's no longer proud of? He's no longer, he has no trust in this company. He has no faith. And he sees just this decline in the integrity of this company that he used to really love. He says the firm changed the way it thought about leadership. Leadership used to be about ideas, setting an example, and doing the right thing. Today, if you make enough money for the firm and you're not currently an axe murderer, you will be promoted into a position of influence. Now, this is a Wall Street heavy. And listen to what he sounds exactly like you, me, or anybody when we say, man, I don't mind making money, but is it all about just making enough money? And you don't have to have any morality. You don't have to have any integrity. You don't have to have any pride in product. You don't have to have any ideas outside of how to screw somebody. Listen to what he says. What are three quick ways to becoming a leader? This is at Goldman Sachs. One, execute on the firm's axes, A-X-E-S, which is Goldman speak for persuading your clients to invest in the stocks or other products that we are trying to get rid of because they're not seen as having a lot of potential profit. Persuade your clients into investing in products or stocks that are seen as not having a lot of potential profit. That means you and me, if we were customers or bankers with Goldman Sachs. They're dumping this crap on us. B, hunt elephants. In English, get your clients, some of whom are sophisticated and some of whom aren't, to trade whatever will bring the biggest profit to Goldman. Call me old-fashioned, but I don't like selling my clients a product that's wrong for them. C, find yourself sitting in a seat where your job is to trade any illiquid, opaque product with a three-letter acronym, illiquid, meaning you can't, you know, it's not worth money. You can't just cash it in, turn it into money right now. Today, many of these leaders display a Goldman Sachs culture quotient of exactly 0%. I attend derivative sales meetings where not one single minute is spent asking questions about how we can help our clients. It's purely about how we can make the most possible money off of them. Now, I'm telling you, folks, I don't know about your business, but this guy might as well be talking about the radio business. I'm not kidding. He might as well be talking about the radio business. Now, I don't know if they have the same conversations in television and film. I don't know. I work a little bit in TV, but radio, I've been in the radio culture my whole professional adult life. And I'm going to read this to you again. I attend derivative sales meetings where not one single minute is spent asking questions about how we can help clients. It's purely about how we can make the most possible money off of them. Now, I'm not a salesman in radio. I'm what we call air talent. I'm talent. But I don't have to be. I know precisely that is the tenor of conversation that happens in my industry. How about yours? What about your business? The country is not where it is today because just one industry or two industries lost their way and decided it didn't matter how we made our money as long as we made our money. This is where it's at. This is what it is. Money is the answer. Absolutely the answer. Well, okay, as you make your money and your product turns to a light shade of turd green, is that okay? Yeah, sure, that's okay. I mean, people don't care. We're giving them what they want. It's fine. There's not much difference between the product today and the product 20 years ago. And in the process, like I said, I don't know about your business, but I know about my business. In the process, I've had people stand up in radio conventions I've been to, seminars, and they say radio is doing things the way it did things in 1985. I read an article in one of the trade journals. 1985, that's where my industry is stuck. How about you guys? Quality? No. Mr. Smith goes on to, he says, it's purely about how we can make the most possible money. If you were an alien from Mars and you sat in on one of these meetings, you would believe that a client's success or progress, and when we say client in the banking business, we mean listener in the radio business, customer in the radio business, where you would believe that a client's success or progress was not part of the thought process at all. Baby, I'm telling you, the guy's speaking the truth. Smith goes on to write, it makes me ill how callously people talk about ripping their clients off. Over the last 12 months, I've sat in, I've listened to people in my industry talking about how they've ran a game on somebody. How they're making this money and that money, and they talk somebody into this, and they talk somebody into that, and it doesn't make any difference. If you go to these guys, you say, hey, here's a great way where we can make some bread on the show, and it's fun, and maybe we can use elements of the show. Nah, it's too tough. It's too difficult. Makes too much. They got to think. It gives them a headache. They got a better way of doing it. It makes me ill how callously they can rip off. Over the last 12 months, I've seen 5 different managing directors refer to their own clients as Muppets. Sometimes over internal email, even after the SEC, Fabulous Fab, Abacus, God's Work, Carl Levin, Vampire Squids, no humility. I mean, come on, integrity, it is eroding. I don't know of any illegal behavior, but will people push the envelope and pitch lucrative and complicated products to clients, even if they're not the simplest investments or the ones most directly aligned with the client's goals? Absolutely. Every day, in fact. So what the guy is saying is this. You as a customer, or anybody's a customer, that's not where it's at. That doesn't mean anything. What is the most important thing is so that they can keep that fat dollar rolling into their own pocket, into their own accounts. You know it to be true because remember what happened during the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac crisis and the subprime loan crisis, where guys were looking just to make their commission. They were looking just to make the number on the number of people that they signed up for a loan. They weren't looking at the applications. They didn't find out whether these people were even making enough income to afford a loan. They didn't look and see whether there was a there. All they wanted to do was get these people signed up, and then they throw this stuff on down the line. They package it up and sell it on down the line, you know.
Yeah, well, that's all well and good, but what are you going to do about it? And that horse died, too.
The horse died?
You're still on that luck thing.
Forget it. All right, so I ain't going to do nothing about it, man, but I thought it was really... I'm going to read the rest of this guy's op-ed, you know, as long as I've got it out here. Don't forget, after the show... We're doing a Q&A. If you go to philhendryshow.com and you have a backstage pass, you'll see a segment on the homepage. You'll see a little part there in the news feed that tells you this is where you ask your questions for our Q&A. That'll be happening right after the show at 1 a.m. We'll probably take a little bit of a break and then start things up at 1 a.m. On our website, philhendryshow.com. We also have, as I said, our voting going on for the Ted Bell bit. That is the best Ted Bell bit ever. And we're going to comprise or compose or compile. That's it. We're going to compile a best of Ted Bell compilation.
That's what compile is?
Yes, that's what compile is. We will compilate whatever, man. It'll be there on a website, and we will do that by way of your votes. So make sure if you're backstage pass holder, go over and vote. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft, as well as Phil Hendry. And, of course, on our website, philhendryshow.com, with a backstage pass, you are entitled to all kinds of goodies, baby. Head on over there to philhendryshow.com and get your backstage pass, watch our live-streaming video of the show, and access all of the great archives, as well as the daily podcast. We love you. We love you. That is, we love university here at the El Pacifico. This is your love daddy.
Phil Hendry.